tune in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
Welcome, everybody, to the 50th episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode and just hanging out with me today. I have a brand new interview for you guys, and this episode is super special for the fact that, like I said, it is the 50th episode, which is so mind-blowing to me that we have sat down together for 50 episodes with some of the most amazing hard rock and heavy metal artists and professionals and fans, and it's amazing that we've done 50 episodes of this, and I can't wait to do 50 more. So I don't know about you guys, but you know, I'm a Sirius XM listener. I, you know, frequently listen to Ozzy's Boneyard, Hair Nation, SiriusXM's Liquid Metal, Octane, all of the incredible stations on SiriusXM, you know, Eddie Trunk, and especially the guests that I have on this week's episode. I have on the metal ambassador himself, Mr. Jose Mangan. He is one of the primary hosts on SiriusXM's Liquid Metal and Octane, and he's also the program director for these stations, which is no small feat. He has done so much over the course of his career. He has been at SiriusXM for almost 22 years. He started in 2000, which we get into that whole story in the interview, but he has done so much. And aside from his radio work and his DJ work, he's also the A&R representative for Affliction Clothing, which is one of my favorite clothing brands. And I know so many of you rockers are big fans of Affliction as well. And he is also involved with Rock Nation, you know, management, hosts pretty much any festival that you can think of, he has hosted or is a part of putting on so many different events. He does so many interviews with some of rock and metal's biggest bands and artists, and he is just so talented in what he does, and most importantly, so incredibly passionate in everything that he does. We talk about it in the interview as well, but there is no shortage of passion in Jose for heavy metal and, you know, every aspect of heavy metal, the fans, the shows, you know, everything that he does in his career. It is truly so inspiring as somebody in this industry. And as many of you know, I recently started my own, you know, DJ journey at WMMR here in Philadelphia. So to sit down and speak with him about the art of being a, you know, DJ, and not even just a DJ, but a presenter, and, you know, talking to people about this music was so incredible for me and so inspiring. You know, also just being a longtime SiriusXM listener. So I think that you guys are really going to enjoy this week's conversation. It is a long one, but one of those conversations where it would definitely be easy for me to say, being the fact that I'm actually in the conversation, to sit here and be like, it didn't feel like it was an hour and a half. But really, and going back and listening to it while I was doing some small edits and, you know, just adjusting the audio and everything like that, I can honestly say that the hour and a half that it almost was went by so quickly. Jose just has so many stories and so many intelligent things to say that it really didn't feel like it was over an hour long. The conversation, it just flew by. And I'm pretty sure if we both had the time, you know, we would have sat there for another hour and a half, possibly even more. So I really think that you guys are going to enjoy this chat with, again, the one and only metal ambassador, Jose Mangan, host of SiriusXM's Liquid Metal and SiriusXM's Octane, two of the most incredible metal stations existing right now in the heavy metal world. They primarily focus on, you know, really heavy metal, but also, you know, highlight a lot of new bands and artists, which I've always loved about what Jose does as well. He really gives new artists and bands a chance, and it's really great to hear and great to see. So if you are a Liquid Metal or Octane fan or a heavy metal fan in general, I think that you guys are really going to enjoy Jose's personality and get a lot out of what he has to say. So here is the 50th episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. Here's my interview with SiriusXM host, Jose Mangan.
Welcome back to another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. And this is a very special episode because I have a fellow rock and metal DJ. Yes, the metal ambassador, Mr. Jose Mangan, joining me on this week's episode. And if you are a Sirius XM listener or just are alive in the rock world, you know Jose from Liquid Metal and Octane. And aside from his DJ work, he also works with Affliction and has hosted every metal event that you could possibly even think of. So thank you so much, Jose, for joining me this week. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's awesome, Sydney. And I love being on your show, and I love meeting new fellow metal ambassadors, you know, and I love that you're out there preaching a good gospel of this music, and I love that. So thank you very much for inviting me on.
Absolutely. I love metal, man. So I mean, that's one thing I want to get right into with you is that I've always, you know, in listening to your work and seeing everything that you've done, it's so evident your passion for the music, like first and foremost. And I know that you get that a lot, but you know, it's just the love that you have for this is so evident in everything that you do. You know, nothing that you do comes off as like he's just doing it for, you know, money or a name or anything. You know, it's really authentic. So I kind of want to just get into the beginnings of, you know, your journey into, you know, being a DJ and kind of how you got here. I know that it kind of started, if I'm correct, with Motley Crue for you, right?
Yes, Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil. I was in kindergarten. Wow. When I got my grandmother, my nana gave me $20 and took my dad took me to Kmart the day after Christmas, and I bought Shout at the Devil. My cousins, who were long-haired, black shirt wearing, black light posters in the garage, in the back shed, chicks and band posters. And I was like, what is this? As a little kid,
right.
That was the biggest influence for me because my parents weren't really music listeners or lovers. It wasn't that I got it from them. My dad was much older too. My dad was 49 when I was born. So, you know, he was in his 50s when I was getting my first tape. And my cousins were who I looked up to. And that was it. I got Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil in kindergarten. A week later, I went back to Kmart and I got Out of the Cellar by Rat.
Oh.
And I love both those albums to this day. I love so much. But that was it. That and I marinated in that sauce for a while, Sydney. And as a little kid, that became everything for me. I used to put my name, Jose, and then put a pentagram in between my name and my last name, Mangan, on little, you know, first grade papers, kindergarten papers. I didn't know it was a satanic symbol. I just thought it was Motley Crue.
Right.
You know? Yeah, there's no harm in that. But yeah, that's it. And my parents, you know, for years, I think they thought it was going to be a phase. I would grow out of it. I got in a lot of trouble in going to Catholic school and being such a huge hyper metalhead. That was it. I mean, that's the one thing that stayed with my life throughout the entire my 44 years on Earth. That's the one thing that stayed with me. You know, it's been heavy metal music, and for so long I was just a massive fan, worshiping these dudes, playing in bands, guitar, bass. Covering Sepultura and Testament and stuff like that, and Metallica and Pantera, and then just introducing my friends to the music, you know, even in high school. And then when I got to college is when I started at college radio, and that was when I was a freshman, and that was a whole other thing. I never even thought about being a DJ. I was just a deliverer of metal, but I never considered myself a DJ. And then I started at the college radio station in Tucson, and then I became the first metal director at the station. And it just felt good getting packages in the mail with my name on it and getting the new Napalm Death or the new Korn album or whatever at the time, and just opening up these packages and being like, whoa, I got this before it's even out. Like, I couldn't even believe it. And you know, I started 97 when I went 95 when I went to college, sorry. And that's when it started for me. So that was huge. And for the first time when I walked into the radio station, I really felt like I belonged there or welcomed because of how obsessive they were about the music. There was posters on the ceiling, posters covering the walls, stickers all over the desks, the trash cans, you know, everywhere. There was just, it was covered in different bands, not just rock bands, bands I didn't even know who they were, but I saw a Korn poster, I saw a Rage Against the Machine poster, and I was like, this is a cool spot to be. And that was it. And I just did that for years because I loved it. Not because I was making money or getting famous from it or any, I just loved it. I loved serving the community by serving metal and helping the local promoter promote concerts and go to these shows and interview these bands. Even though it was a tiny ass little radio station, I still was doing something. And right. it never crossed my mind, oh, this is going to be a career option. It was always like, oh, this is what I get to do for fun. Because Sydney, I went to school to be a pharmacist. I'm a chemistry major. So the reason I went to University of Arizona, I got a full ride academic scholarship, but it also has an excellent pharmacy school and a science program. You know, it's a nerdy school in Arizona. And ASU was more of the party school. U of A was more for nerds. And I've been a nerd, a metal nerd, a nerd in school. And so nerds are cool. And so that's what led me to doing all that stuff. But again, it was always for fun. It was never like, I never had grand plans. You know, like I didn't, and I should have thought about it back then, but I didn't, you know, I had no idea.
You're doing stuff. I mean, you know, I had the same kind of thing that happened to me where, I mean, you feel like in music, I always grew up when I would see, you know, things about the music industry or, you know, watch movies. And, you know, it was always like you had to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody to get even in the realm of working in the music industry. And, you know, when I was starting to try to figure out how I wanted to get in here, you know, I didn't think that, you know, it would be as easy as, you know, going to school for it or, you know, getting into a college radio station or something like that. So it's sometimes hard to look at that, you know, step back and be like, oh, I can actually do this. It's actually feasible, you know, especially when you're, you know, just kind of in the middle of it. So I get that.
Yeah, I was focusing on chemistry. Right. You know, I had to do my undergraduate stuff to move on to graduate school to be a doctor of pharmacy. Like, that's all I thought about. I mean, not all I thought about, but that was what I had my sort of life written down on schedule. Like, I was going for all that stuff. And it wasn't until I went to graduate school in Tennessee when I chose University of Tennessee College of Pharmacy. I applied to 3 graduate schools, Arizona, Colorado, and Tennessee. And all of them were top 10 pharmacy school programs at the time. And I was like, I can do this. I'm poor, I'm Mexican, and I've got awesome grades. You know, that was really a great thing for me, you know, then was that, you know, like this is the type of people that, you know, I'm the dudes that, you know, grants were kind of written for, you know, and, you know, that type of person, you know, that's almost there, but I have my family was so poor. We had no money. And so I had to do it all by myself, but I went to graduate school in Tennessee. And the reason I chose that school, Sydney, was because it had an awesome FM rock station. At WMFS at the time, and it was an active rock station, and it was pretty cool around, you know, 99, 98 when I was looking into this stuff, 99. And I was like, man, you know, that would be kind of a cool place to work. And my half sister worked out there in Tennessee in Memphis, and her and her husband worked at St. Jude's. So I'm like, you know, I have an in with them too, you know, like that's pretty powerful. And they're both pharmacists. So I was like, you know, that would be kind of, I've never thought about Memphis, you know, but let me go to Memphis. And then I went to Memphis, and I remember I got there. And as soon as I got there, I tried getting, you know, my contacts from college radio. And I was like, hey man, can you reach out to the program director of MFS and see if I can, you know, talk to him, get an interview. Yeah. You know, we told him about you, but you know, he doesn't really need anybody right now. And so I was like, he was also a DJ in the afternoons and the program director. And in between my pharmacy classes, I would use the courtesy phone in the middle of the hallways for our pharmacy school. Because cell phones weren't really around back then. I didn't have one at that time. And so this is 98 in Memphis. And so I remember calling him, you know, at least once a week or so, I would call him and be like, hey, man, it's Jose. You know, I'd love to come in and meet with you. And he'd be like, dude, I don't have time. It's the holidays. Blank. You know, hey, well, call me after the next holiday blank, you know, and I would keep trying. And then finally he said, oh, come on in. Okay, I'll meet with you. And then I went in, I said, hey, I would love to do a metal show. And he was like, no way. You know, we're not a metal station,
right,
dude. And I was like, oh, but you know, I'm this metal guy. And he's like, so, you know, but then they gave me a job in the promotions department because they were like, all right, this dude's, you know, excited, hungry. Let's see. And so, and then I got a job doing overnights. I filled in one night and then for an overnight slot on the weekends. And they loved what they heard. They said, oh, do it again next time we need a fill-in. So I became a fill-in on FM radio in the overnights for the weekends while still going to pharmacy school. And then eventually, a few months in, I started a metal show there in Memphis on Saturday nights at midnight. It was called Beyond the Pit, and which was the same name on my college radio show. Yeah, it's such a cool name. And I did that. And after like a year of doing that and reporting to the trade magazines and, you know, continuing to push metal outside of the college radio show, this was a bigger platform, you know. And I was serving the tri-state area. So we hit people in Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee. And there was a lot of metalheads there. The show became pretty popular. And then I won an award for best metal director and DJ in Album Network, which was a trade magazine back in the day. And so people in the industry saw my picture, saw my little, you know, story. Yeah. And they were like, this dude's cool. And they knew me from college radio. So this dude's cool. So then I started getting job offers to work in the business. But I'm like, wait a minute. I have 3 years left of pharmacy school to be a doctor. You know, I've been pursuing this for so long. Like, I don't know. And then TVT Records flew me out to New York City. And it was my first time going out to Manhattan. I was, wow, blown away. I couldn't even believe it. I'm from the border of Arizona and Mexico, a tiny little town. So to be in New York City, I was amazed by it. And obviously, I fell in love like anybody does and would when you go to New York City with an opportunity to maybe work at this record label. And so I went there, I interviewed, and I was like, this is really cool. And then I talked to my dad, and my dad and I were, he pushed education on me. Just because that's all he was a very smart man. He didn't play baseball or football with me. I mean, he taught me how to write essays. You know, he taught me state capitals. He taught me how to speak and write and stand out on paper and how important that was and still is to this day. But, and I talked to my dad and I said, hey, dad, I have this opportunity to go to New York City to work in the rock business. And he was like, I thought he was going to say like, no, you're crazy, Jose. You're almost a doctor. Like, don't do this. You've worked so hard. You've spent so much money and time and effort on this. And then he told me, you got to do it. You can't regret anything like this. What if you regret this forever? And he told me a story that my dad was in the an army. And he was in the Korean War, the Korean conflict, and it changed his life. And he joined the army not because he kind of really, really wanted to, but it was also family pressure. And it was, you know, outside pressure, you know, kind of wanting to do that. And he was like, oh, okay, but he wanted to be an attorney. And he's like, I'll do this real quick. And then the Korean conflict happened. And then he went off to Korea and then he became disabled and, you know, messed up from it. And then he came back and he was, you know, I didn't know any of this, but then he was just saying that he just regretted every day. He regretted that decision. And it hit me so hard. And I was like, whoa, dad, you know, and he was like, you got to do this. You know, you got to do this. And I said, boom, with my dad saying that to me, and I already felt that. I was like, okay, wow. You know, all this school, all this education led me to this position point in life. Yeah. Like the Led Zeppelin said, song, you know, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. So I was like, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do this. Like, oh my God. And it was embarrassing with a lot of family and people that I worked with in pharmacy and forever. Like, they were like, what are you doing? You know? And I'm like, I'm gonna go to New York City and work at a rock label and bye, you know? It's like, but I did that. And I made that very scary decision, because life is about those type of decisions. And then it's like choose your own adventure, those old school books. Like you can go one way or you can go this way, which goes to all these different ways. But I said I had to do it. And then a few months after working at TVT, Sydney, I got a call from Sirius Satellite Radio. But here's how the funny part about that, they didn't call me to recruit me. They were calling me because I was the record label guy and they wanted a bunch of albums, CDs, to build the alternative channel. Like, so he asked me for we had Guided by Voices and XTC and all these bands that I don't really like that stuff, you know, but I was more of the metal rock guy, but the alternative stuff was stuff that I worked as well. So this guy called me up and I was like, Sirius Satellite, what is that? You know, and this was the summer of 2000. I had just started in January of 2000 at TVT. And in the summer, I get this call and then he tells me what the Sirius is. And I'm like, man, I don't know. That sounds crazy. You're asking me for 50 albums, dude? Like, I got to get approval from my manager. I don't know, man. And he was like, I'll send you some information on the company in the mail. So a couple of days later, I get a pamphlet on the PATH train from New York City back to Jersey where I lived. And I was reading this pamphlet and it's Sirius Satellite Radio, and it explain the short brief history of it, how they raised the money to build these $1 billion satellites, the executives they had from all these different industry companies that were coming to build Sirius, the subscription plan. And then I got to the programming guide and I was going through it, and I right away my eyeballs went right to rock, and then I was going to metal and I was like, oh my god, is there a metal station? And I said, it's a 24/7 heavy metal. And then that was it. I saw that and I knew that I had to fucking work there. I knew that I had to do anything I could to be a part of that new 24/7 metal channel. So then I told the guy who asked me for all this stuff, I was like, yo, I'll give you anything and everything you want. Who's the rock guy? Give me his email. I need to talk to him. So I sent this rock guy at the time a big email on how I live, shit, and breathe metal. He wrote me two sentences back. Like, I invited him to a concert to go see one of the bands on our label at Irving Plaza in New York City.
Okay.
He agreed to come meet me there. And then he just said, he also called me crazy, you know, because my email was probably pretty insane, you know? I mean, I was really pouring it out there. When I write shit, I write with purpose. Like, I'm not going to just, a sentence that doesn't stand out. Like, I'm going to stand out. Like, you know, on paper, on camera, on the air, I'm going to stand out. And so that's what that email was. We met. He really liked me a lot, inviting me up to the headquarters, which they were just building in Times Square. And we still had plastic walls. Where there were going to be glass walls. And I remember memorizing the brochure, right? I'm waiting in the lobby, Sydney, to meet this rock guy. And I'm like looking, I'm 36 floors high. I'm looking at Radio City Music Hall right down there. I'm like, God, this is crazy. Where am I? What am I doing? And then the head of programming, an Italian lady, walking down the hallway, and I see her because I memorized the brochure. I know who she is. So I get up and I'm like, hey, what's up? Hey, Maria. Hey, I'm Jose Mangi. Nice to meet you. And she said, how do you know my name? And who are you? And I said, I'm here to see, you know, the rock dude. And I know you because I memorized the brochure. And she started cracking up. She started talking to me. She was like, "What? Who are you? What are you doing here?" And I just talked to her. I just said, I'm from the Mexican border and I went to school to be a pharmacist and I'm here because I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've done metal my whole life. And she's like, do you know Spanish? And I was like, of course. And I started speaking Spanish with her fluently. And she asked me about Latin rock bands. And I started naming off all these Latin rock bands because I grew up on the border and I knew so many of them. And then she was like, you are perfect. And 2 weeks later, I got a job offer to come build the rock department and the Spanish rock department at Sirius Satellite Radio. So I started in September of 2000. So it'll be my 22nd anniversary at the company this September. So there's the long story of how I got here.
That is incredible. And you think about it and, you know, it seems like you're talking about, you know, you got all this way of, you know, going to school to become a pharmacist. But when you really think about it, it's like if you didn't do that, you wouldn't, it all led, you know, to here. If you didn't go to graduate, you know, school in Tennessee, you know, you wouldn't have ever worked at that station and you wouldn't, it's so crazy. I always find just like the chain reaction of things like that so incredible. That's amazing.
It's so important. That's why education is so important. And I think people are forgetting that. It's not just about the degree, you know, or the certificate. It's about the journey.
Yes.
Of getting there. It's about the people that you're going to meet, you know, future coworkers, wives, husbands, you know, whatever. You're going to meet all these different characters, best friends of your life because of these things that you did. So what I always stress to young kids, college students, high school students, anybody that's in this line of work and wants to do what I do, they always ask me, how do I get to where you are? What did you do? What can I major in to do what you're doing? And it's such a hard question to answer, but it's an easy one. I went to school to be a pharmacist, you know? and then people's reaction is like, what?
Huh?
No. And I'm like, yes, I'm an organic chemistry nerd. I used to carry around a periodic table of elements in my wallet, a laminated one, a little mini one. And I remember showing my at the time, she was a girl that I was, you know, going out with, sort of. She became my wife. But I remember showing her my periodic table. And she thought that was the stupidest thing. Like, she was like, that's such a nerdy thing. That's, what are you doing? Like, that's not cool. And I'm like, you're wrong. It is cool. You know, so... But I push education. Push it to all students of all ages. And it's just like how important it is, because even if you pursued something, you know, you'll get that degree if that's what you want, you're pursuing that, but, or you could do other things, but you wouldn't know. Like if I from this tiny town, I was such a metalhead. I had long hair and a mustache and a unibrow, you know, and I was super cool. And I was just like, raw. I would have been in a band. You know, I would have probably been in a band and then be manager of like AutoZone or something, you know, and I don't know. But, you know, I think it was in high school where I was like, I'm going to use my brain. And we're also, my friends and people were getting busted for drugs, and it was a real big drug town. We crossed everything over the border. So these were all my friends and fellow classmates and family members getting busted or making money, you know? So it was a really different, crazy time back then. And I just made the decision to use my brain to get out of this place. And it really paid off. Like, I can't even believe it. I'm so blessed, Sydney. I'm so blessed. But I still use all that skills from being such a nerd in school. And such, like, I use it for programming. I use it for analyzing data, spins, research.
Right.
You know, what do I want in my catalog? What do I want in currents? What's the percentage of rotation for, you know, currents versus catalog? And how fast, what's the turnover of the songs? And programming is very mathematical and analytical in a lot of nerdy ways. And I love that about it. I love writing. All the copy, the production, the summaries, the descriptions, to send to staff, to send to the social media people, to send to the bands, you know, like all that stuff. You got to be able to write. You got to be able to do all that stuff. And really, my education, I think, put me in a really awesome position to succeed and to kick ass. And you know, I'm very blessed to have a unique position. There is nothing else like it in the world. Nobody has this job. And, you know, I'm not going anywhere. Like, they're going to bury me. And as I'm getting buried, I'll still be doing my show somehow. I don't know, from the grave, you know, but it's a dream job. And I love being able to make people happy and make, you know, and that bands and fans. So it's really, really, really kind of crazy.
Yeah. And something that, you know, listening to you, you know, tell that story and, you know, all of the times that you were my, one of my favorite sayings that I was told to by a really good friend one time that very early on has never left my brain is, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And I have remembered that in every situation, whether it's a job or, you know, getting an interview or, you know, you use that example, you know, so well. And, you know, you have to be persistent and determined. And, you know, yeah, you got to call or email, you know, the person that, you know, has the ability to, you know, make your dreams come true in a sense. You know, you got to keep pounding on the door. You know, eventually it's going to open. And, you know, like you said, calling the program director and going, hey, do you need anything? Hey, do you need anything? Because eventually they're going to see you're authentic, you know, you really want this. It's not, you know, bullshit. And, you know, eventually they're going to be like, man, I should probably give this person a chance. They're like, you know, banging on the door over and over again. So I think that that's such a great example of that, you know, just determination and persistence.
I mean, that's the big part of the battle. And that's where a lot of people give up. A lot of people just settle and give up. And, you know, it's hard though. It is hard, like, to jump into this business right now. It is, it's not easy. Like, there are no jobs for this. You know, I mean, there's the internet, which anybody can, you know, now kind of do their own thing. And I think that's such an awesome opening that we didn't have that chance before. Like, I just couldn't start a cool podcast or a cool video cast back in the day. It wasn't as cool and as easy it is, but I love how there's so many people that are getting into this and helping to spread the music, helping to talk about this in more formats and in other ways, you know, getting their circle of friends and family to hear these shows and to watch these shows. It all goes to helping the music community. And so, but again, you know, doing stuff out of purity, not because you're trying to make a buck, even at the beginning of Sirius. Like, it was never about money either. I still say it to this day to the company, and probably I shouldn't say it publicly, but I do. I would pay SiriusXM to work there. I would pay them to let me do my shows. That's how much I love it. I can't believe that I get paid to do this stuff, you know, after all these years, but that's how I feel. Like, I feel like it's so second nature to me. To be on the air every day and to get us through these crazy ass times, you know, when the last 2 years have been pretty nuts. And I've been on the radio every single day, except for weekends, thankfully. But it's been rough. Imagine sitting here. I have a TV here in front of me, and I have a bunch of cool my computers and everything, my screens. But, like, you know, when real world stuff is happening and you're on the radio at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon and there's real crazy stuff happening that's big, you know, like, you know, just everything, all the bad stuff that's been happening too. You know, I just try to keep reminding our listeners, united is going to be the way we get through this shit. Because I could have chose the path of a divider, but I chose a long time ago to be a uniter, to bring us together. And that's what's been so satisfying for me, is being able to be a consistent voice of positivity and of warmth, and being authentic on the radio every day through these crazy times together and trying to help us. You know, I mean, the pandemic was crazy. You know, people didn't work for a long time. We didn't skip a beat. It became crazier for us, busier. Then all of a sudden, you know, we're doing Zoom interviews every day. And before, we had to wait for an artist to come to one of our studios to do stuff. And now it's like, oh, we can just do it right now. Like, you know. And so it just became so easy. So it became crazier with work, you know. But being there and being with you and all the listeners, it's been really, really cool. So it becomes personal. Yeah. It's personal. All this stuff is very personal. I'm very personal on the radio. You know, the way I talk right now and the way I talk on the radio is the way I talk in real life.
Yeah.
And the way I talk to my friends and the way I get excited to show somebody, you know, in my truck, check out this new song. Like, it's the same way that I would do on the radio. But that's what makes it so easy, where I don't have to think about it. You know, a lot of times presenters, hosts, think that they have to find a character or play a role. You know, I've trained and hired most of the DJs on our rock platform at Sirius XM. And sometimes it's been tough. People think, oh, well, I need to be this person. It's like, well, no, just why don't you just be yourself? Like I had one DJ and we had an air check and we were, you know, he was kind of sounding like he was being robotic or not sounding very natural on the radio. And then he was telling me the story outside on the sidewalk on 49th Street. We were walking to the train and then he was like, oh man, I just went to this show. This happened. And then I was like, dude, why can't you just talk like that on the radio? Just talk to me, talk to one person. Like just what you just did. That's a break, right? That's a radio break. You know, when you're on a microphone and you put your headphones on, all of a sudden you change your voice and you do all this stuff. But why? Stop. Just talk. Be yourself. Be authentic. That's the thing that I would tell anybody that wants to be a host. Just be you, right? Be you. If you have to be a character, then you always have to think about that character. And then you can't be yourself. Then you're not that character. Sometimes it's okay to be yourself. I mean, always okay to be yourself. But sometimes it's okay to say stuff like, man, like my teeth hurt, you know, or be real. Mess up on the radio. You know, if you mess up a word, start over. Start again and keep going. Like you trip, get up and keep finishing. You know, because that's really cool. I mess up all the time. I say the wrong shit. I mess up all the time, but I'm on the radio 12 hours a day. I mean, I'm going to mess up a lot.
It's the great thing about it. It's the aspect, like you said, it is so personal. Like, you know, it's somebody's in their car or doing something, you know, listening while they're at work. You know, it's when you're listening, you think that whoever's on the radio is talking specifically to you, which is, I mean, it's how it should be. And it's something that, like you just said, you know, when you're behind the microphone, you know, just pretend you're talking to a friend, you know, that it's because you are. I mean, essentially, these people are tuning in. And like you were saying about kind of the one thing that unites us, you know, like we're listening to the station and either I'm DJing or somebody's listening or somebody's tuning in their car. And, you know, we're all here for the same thing that we all love. I feel like sometimes it does get, you know, in your head to, you know, realize, okay, I'm like live and there are people listening. And if I screw up, I think I screwed up, you know, 10 times more than people actually realize I screwed up. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you're live though. Like people are, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, when you're talking in a situation, you're not like, yeah, like you said, like, oh, I am, you know, this and this and that and doing this. And, you know, like, it's just not, it's not real. And I feel like people don't gravitate towards things that are, you know, not authentic, at least in this community of like, you know, rock. And it's
and you can tell the fake ones from the real ones, especially in this music. I mean, really, especially in this music. I know people that don't even go to shows and and it's like, how can you be a rock DJ? No, like that's rule number one. Go to rock shows, go to festivals, hang out with, you know, everyone.
Absolutely.
And really experience what the lifestyle, the community, what it's about. And that's so important to give back and to realize that. And that's where I think I've been blessed, that, you know, I've always been just the same. And so I think people that hear me for the first time and like, oh, this guy, you know, I don't know. Some people, he's annoying. I hate him. Every word he says, I hate his voice. And then after years, it's like, oh, well, damn it. At least he's consistent. You know, he's the same stoner, tequila drinking, metalhead, positive guy. Like, okay, damn, it's hard to find things to hate, you know? So I'm just going to keep killing everyone with kindness and keep being a unifier. And I think it works, but it's long term and it works. You know, if I wanted to be a negative dude, I'd have more followers. I'd be, you know, more people would be like, oh, what's he going to say next and stuff. But if you're just always positive, like, you know, yeah, he's Jose. It's Jose. He's positive. Okay, next. Like, oh, this person's talking this and saying this. It's like, I'm here for the long haul. Yeah. And I'm just going to do this consistently and be really loving to the bands, to the fans, and to always, like you mentioned too, always talk to one person. It's the best thing that you can do as a host and as a presenter. That's like secret sauce right there for DJs, because a lot of professional big DJs, you will hear them and they're talking, they're saying, oh, you guys, every one of you,
all this. And it's like, Oh,
stop. No, dude, you're talking to one person, yeah. One person. And I hear veteran broadcasters mess that up all the time. So it's always easier and more personal to talk to one person. And then they feel it, like you just said, they feel that on the other end because that person's talking to me. And then they've seen my family being raised. They've seen my daughters go from embryos to, 18-year-old chicks, So it's like people have an investment, as well with SiriusXM and it's a personal investment. And when I meet people, they're like, oh my God, and they're so loving and friendly and they say all these things and remember all these things that I say. And I'm like, wow. And how are your daughters? And oh, that was so great that she's singing now and that this girl is doing this. It's like, wow. Like people really, really pay attention, but that's our community, man. It's a small, very passionate, tight knit community. And I love being a leader in that world.
No, it's really cool. It's, like I said, everything that you do and, you say, it all comes off really authentic. So, I think that definitely shines through. But, one thing that I wanted to just ask to see, I feel like every DJ, and I know we kind of talked about it briefly, and just now about, sometimes you screw up. I feel like every DJ has had times and specific memories and, their heads, whether they accidentally had dead air or they said something completely wrong or they thought they had dead air and they didn't. Do you have any story that comes to your mind exactly that you're like, I fucked up?
Yes, I have the ultimate fuck up story. And it was so big. Okay. It was System of a Down and it was the entire band and they never do entire band interviews. Not never, but they hardly ever did at that time. And even now, and it was around Hypnotized, Mesmerized around that time. They were just the biggest band in the world. We convinced them, management convinced them that it'd be a good idea for all of them to come up. So they all did. We all got into the main studio right off the lobby in New York City and I was running it and the guys all came in. We were, everyone was saying what's up. And then I got behind the microphone, behind the main area and we just kind of started the interview and like quickly, it was just so, I was like, oh, boom. And I jumped right into it and we started talking. And afterwards, everybody, I closed it out and everybody was like, yes, like high-fiving each other. The band members, management, record label, everybody was like, oh my God, that was the coolest all band interview that we've done. And people were like, just freaking out. And then, giving me praise. And I was like, oh my God, okay, wait, before you guys go, because they were getting up and taking their headphones off. And everyone was amped up. And I was like, wait, I need some IDs. Because usually I would get IDs in the beginning.
Yeah.
Just to get it out of the way. But I didn't because we started so fast. So then they were like, all right. So they put their headphones on. They came back to the microphone. I turned around and I was going to hit pause and then go to the next track to go to track two would be like the IDs. 0000000. Across my CD. I didn't fucking record it. I didn't do a backup. I didn't record it into the system. I didn't do anything. And it was almost an hour. Okay. So then the last person out of the studio was the record label guy, the head of rock for a major label. Everybody's in the lobby. I see them still high-fiving, hugging each other. I go, hey dude, come here. To the record label guy. I won't say who his name was. And then I said, hey, dude, I got to tell you something. I didn't hit record. And then he said, what? I said, I didn't record it, dude. And I was panicking.
Yeah.
And he was like, don't fucking say a word. Don't tell the band. Don't say anything. And then he walked out of the fucking studio and I stood there by myself like, so I went out to the lobby to say goodbye and I couldn't even my whole demeanor, but they left pretty quickly. I went outside and I cried. It was the first time that something at work just crushed me so hard. And I didn't record it. And besides, like, my work, you know, the band, like, it just, it was like a big epic fail on all parts. And all I got was a fucking ID at the very end. So then I went to Ozfest that weekend in Connecticut, and I saw the guys backstage, and I said, you know, hello to them. And they were being so cool to me. And then I told them, I was like, hey, I didn't record it. All four of them backstage before their headline Ozfest set. And they all put their heads down. They walked away from me. They weren't cool. They didn't say anything to be like, oh, it'll be okay. You know, like, oh, nothing. They all walked away like disgusted. And I just was like, again, I was like fucking cry right there. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I just sat there, stood there, and I didn't know what to say. I'll just leave now. And then Shavo, bass player, came up to me and he was like, hey dude, put his arm around me. And he was like, hey, I have Monday off. I was gonna come back to New York with my family and friends and my girl. We were gonna go to Manhattan, and you know, like, this was in Connecticut. I was in Connecticut at Ozfest. And then he was like, I'll come up and then I'll do the interview, but it'll just be me. And I said, dude, Shavo, thank you. So Shavo came up on Monday afternoon with like an entourage of like eight people. And he got into one of our other studios. And as before we even started, he pulled out this giant pipe and he started smoking weed in our studio. You can't do that in New York City. Like in our,
no.
it's strict. Like you can't do that.
Yeah.
But I was like, yo, Shavo, dude, like, oh, I don't think you can smoke dad right here. And he was like, bro, you fucked up. I'm here on my day off. I'm going to fucking smoke weed right here. You could, what do you want? What are you going to do? And I was like, all right, well, let me have some.
I mean, if we're going to do it, right, let's do it together.
I'm going to go. I'm not getting fired right now. I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory, man. So let's go. And so, but we did it and it was safe. I wasn't fired. Nobody found out. We did a cool, fun interview. He gave me shit the entire time. You know, we did an intro where he said, you fucked up, bro. And so he made fun of me the entire time, but it was a really cool interview. And since then, Shavo and I have been really good friends. You know, he's been so sweet. I've loved smoking weed with him over the years. He has a great new cannabis company, 22 Red. And we've been really cool to each other. And I can't wait to see him. I hope maybe next week I'm going to go to the Corn System of a Down show. So, but yeah, so that was my biggest of all time mess up ever. Yeah, so on air, nothing really that big of a deal. I mess up so much, I don't even catalog them anymore. But that System of a Down one was, and I haven't recorded band interviews a few times after that on accident, but they were with whatever bands. Like, we were doing them favors. Like, it wasn't like we really wanted System this band. I was like, oh, I'll do the interview, sure. And then I forgot to hit record it afterwards. I was like, oh, well, don't got it. Moving on, next. So that's happened before. But yeah, that System one was a real big, big mess up. But, you know, did I learn from my mistakes? I mean, yeah, kind of. But like I just told you, I've messed up since then. So
it's hard, though, like when, you know, you're the person that's, you know, you're behind the board and you're responsible to make sure that everything technically goes right while you're trying to entertain a group of four people and keep a conversation moving. And like, it's a lot. Like, I feel like sometimes people don't understand what really goes into that, you know, especially it's a little different in a situation like this where all I had to do is press record on Zoom and it's taking care of it for me. But, you know, you're on the air and you're operating the board and making sure, you know, everything's going. It's an in-depth. So I don't blame you at all for that. I mean, shit happens, you know.
And, you know, sitting to this day, I still get nervous before all of my interviews, before any stage introduction, not before I'm on the radio. But when I'm doing, yeah, I do get the same nerves, but I think that's good.
Yes.
You know, it kind of keeps me on my toes.
I mean, it means that you can't, like, I've gotten this a lot too. I mean, before I do an interview and even like starting, like I said, this whole DJ thing on like FM, I did college, now I'm into this thing. And so, I mean, the first couple times I've been getting better because I've been filling in a bit, but I mean, it's still nerve wracking sometimes, but you know, I've had conversations with people and it's like, it means that you care, you know, you're not just getting on and doing it and being like, ah, who gives a fuck? You know, if it happens, whatever happens, happens. I mean, it's, you know, you want it to go well, you want it to be successful, you know, whatever content you're making or saying or, you know, so I think that it's a good thing, you know, and I'm impressed that after all, you know, this time, I mean, 21 years, almost 22 years of working there, you know, you still get nervous. I'm sure you still get nervous, you know, before you talk to people like Metallica and like, you know, a lot of the bands that you grew up loving and you're like, still probably like, holy shit, I get to talk to these people. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm comfortable with everyone except James Hetfield. Yeah. From Metallica. And he's such a teddy bear to me and he loves me and I love him way, 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 way more, but it's, I still get nervous. They're Metallica and Pantera are my two favorite bands. And Robert is super close and Kirk and I are super close. Lars, you know, I'm very comfortable with Lars. I'm not nervous around him. For some reason, I feel like, because I've done so much stuff with him over the years and yeah. I've done a lot with James. I've been very, very lucky to be given access to James because he's a big fan of what I'm doing with Liquid Metal and he's been listening to SiriusXM for a long time. In Rolling Stone magazine back in 2008, James Hetfield name checked me in a interview where he asked someone, the reporter interviewer asked him, what are you listening to nowadays, James? Just very open-ended. And the first thing that he said was, there's a station on Sirius called Heart Attack. This is back in the day. And there's a DJ named Jose. He's like a freaking firecracker of energy and passion or something else. I almost have it memorized, but I couldn't believe that my idol, I didn't even know him at that time. I met him in person after that, but for him to say that, it's like,
out of the blue. Oh my God.
I couldn't believe it. So he has asked me to help pick bands for his Orion Fest that they did. Taking selfies on his phone with me, for him, you know, like that blows my, cause I'm the one that'd be like, hey dude, let's do a quick picture, you know? But one time he was like, hey Jose, let's do a picture. I was like, on your phone?
You mean this is going to be in your camera roll? Like, this is crazy.
So, and he emailed me that picture too. So, I mean, yeah, I still buckle at the knees when I talk to James. I just did a big interview with him in regards to the 30th anniversary of the Black Album. And that was last September. And I remember the interview was supposed to be after the Howard Stern Metallica performance. And that went on a lot longer. And then we waited. So my interview time was at one time, it was an hour later. Ooh. So, but I was on a Zoom session in an LA studio. I was at my house and he was in there. So I was just talking to the engineer, but we were just waiting because any minute James could have walked in. Right. So imagine Sydney waiting an hour like this to interview James. And I'm just like,
any second now could happen. It's like,
you know, okay, not yet. On my notes, and I'm like, oh my God. And then my armpits, and then my ass crack, and everything, my hands, everything starts to get super wet and sweaty. And I can't, I freak out. And it's, yeah, that was probably my most panicked interview, was waiting an hour to talk to James Hetfield. Like, that was torture. It was, I couldn't handle it. I couldn't take it. My heart was beating so fast that I had to do breathing exercises. I swear, Sydney, yeah, because I was freaking out. And then I heard his voice in the background, and then he was like, oh. And then my friend was like, oh no, he's just gonna go outside and smoke a cigarette. I was like, oh my God, he's almost here. You know, like, oh my God. I just gave him a big hug. In December last month, I was at the 40th anniversary shows in the Bay Area, and I hosted a concert that features James's son, Lars's two kids, and Robert's son, and the three bands played together in between the Metallica shows on Saturday night, and I hosted this performance, and the dads were there, and you know, that little room was cut off to everyone. They had the COVID dogs there. That was the first time that I ran into a COVID dog. And then weeks later, it was a story on the metal news sites that Metallica hired COVID dogs. And I got sniffed by one of those COVID dogs to get into this friends and family area upstairs. Right. And then to go back to their little room at this old church where they were playing at. Like I was talking to Robert and I was, oh, yeah. And all of a sudden, like, I have my mask on, you know, and all of a sudden, everybody does. And all of a sudden, I sense an energy right behind me, and I can smell a cigarette. And then I turned around, and it was James.
James, isn't it?
Oh, and he has this big wool coat on, and he's got boots. He looks so cool. He has his big mask on, too. And then I was like, hey, James. And then I was about to say, it's me. But he knew, and he just opened his arms, and he gave me a big hug. And I was like,
my God.
James. Yeah, and I was able to hug Lars. Robert is so close. We're so close. But I gave three hugs to Metallica that night. And I was that stuff is what I do all this shit for, is to give hugs to Metallica. Like, then that's it. That's my prize. That's my award. Yeah. That's the thing that I get, like, the for being here and doing this shit so long is stuff like that. Yeah. I can hug James.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, the biggest interview I've done so far was I had Alice Cooper on, who is like he is my Metallica. He is my James Hetfield. I love Alice. And so I had him on the podcast, and, you know, I'm in my bedroom, because this was like, you know, still like, you know, COVID, and like there was no studio, nowhere I could go. And so, you know, I'm like in my bedroom, and I got like my vinyl behind me. And, you know, I didn't have to wait an hour, though. Thank God I didn't have to wait an hour. But I mean, even having him on, I mean, like, I've had the opportunity to meet him a bunch of times, and I'm really familiar with his band and Nita, and, you know, I know them all well. You know, just they've known me since I was like 15. And so I'm still, though, no matter how many times I see him or talk to him or, you know, whatever, I'm still completely just like shell shocked. I'm like, I can't believe you're talking to me. There was one time where I went to, I think, a Hollywood Vampires show, and I got to see him afterwards. And, you know, I start talking to him, and he's like, you know, yeah, Sydney, like, I know who you are. And he starts telling Johnny Depp about me. And I'm like, huh? Like, this is crazy. So, like, even though, like, that stuff like that has happened, and, you know, having him on the podcast, and, like, it doesn't matter. It's still whenever I'm in the vicinity, you know, of him or, like, talking to him, I'm still like, just my mind is blown. So I totally get that feeling. It's incredible.
I love Alice Cooper. He has been such a great representative for my home state, Arizona, where he's done so much for the communities there. And I love Alice Cooper so much. He's such a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's the best. He is the absolute best. So, yeah, no, I wanted to talk to you really quick too about, cause I found it so interesting. You mentioned Pantera. I love Pantera as well. And I know that, you know, you were of course friends with Vinny, and, you know, have a long kind of history with those guys. And I saw, it was a little bit over a year ago, I think it's been a little bit, but you had inherited his limo, and it was this whole kind of journey of getting it renovated, and a GoFundMe was set up, and you raised $50,000. And I was looking at it, and people are still donating to it, you know, months later. So first, give me a little insight onto how you obtained the limo, because that's crazy.
Just hearing you say those words and that intro, it still blows my mind, and I cannot believe that. They're my absolute favorite band, and I can't believe that I have this prize of theirs, which they loved. They called it the White Fang. It's oh my God. So I mean, yeah, Pantera is my favorite band. My first tattoo was Pantera. My necklace, I got Pantera tattoos on my hand, on my legs still. Our dog is named Rocky Dimebag. I became very close with Vinny, you know, after the death of his brother, and just was there for Vinny and his dad. And I did so much for them, you know, just as a fan, as a programmer, as a host, just always loving And then I became, you know, fortunate to be very close with them when they started Hell Yeah. Tom Maxwell is a longtime friend of mine from the band Nothing Face. So they were a big, big band in my life. And he joined up with Vinnie Paul. I've known Chad since, you know, the beginning, the Mudvayne days. So I was like, oh, wow. And so they really, you know, came to me and said, hey, Jose, we need you and your support. I was like, oh, my God, of course. So I just went above and beyond, you know, for them and for Vinny. And over the years, did just everything with them, everything, partying, hanging out at his house, doing specials with him anywhere and everywhere, hosting his book release, photo book release parties in New York City. Like, I mean, I'm just anything they would ask me to do. I hosted every Dime Bash, every Ride for Dime, almost everything that was Pantera Dime Bag related, you know, I was there and mostly. And so, I never made a penny, any money from that. It was all volunteer stuff. Like I hosted all these years and years and years of things just to host it, not for anything else, but that. So I think my years and years and years of devotion and dedication really paid off in a supernatural way. But when Vinny passed, it was very, very, very traumatic for so many of us. And I went to his funeral and I was there by myself, super high in the beginning in the lobby, just kind of seeing all the people that were coming in and just like, really like, what, where am I? What is happening right now? Yeah. And then Pantera's publicist came over to me and she grabbed my hand and she started walking with me and she said, hey, we need you to speak. And I said, oh, you mean at the public memorial this Sunday, which was tomorrow. And she was like, no, now we want you to speak here at his services and for the private services. And I was like, are you kidding? In front of every, what now? Like, why didn't you tell me? Like, oh my God. Like I start panicking.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck right now? She was like, yes, but we trust that you can just do it. Just wing it. And I was like, what? So then I, Sydney, this is crazy. Open casket. There's only like four speakers. Ace Frehley from Kiss is one of them. And me, I'm just a fan. I'm not anybody. I'm a huge fan. And to be waiting to go up to talk at the podium in front of family and friends and Chelsea and Bry Dog. And I was like, oh my God. So I went up there and I delivered a very from the heart words, for maybe 10 minutes. I don't even know how long I spoke, but I made everybody laugh. A real loud roar. I want to share this quick little story.
Yeah.
This is, and then I'll get to the limo part, but this is fun. I was talking directly to Jerry, Vinny and Dime's father, and he was in the front row in the middle. And I said, I was talking about, you know, I don't know how I set it up, but I was like, hey, and you, sir, you have golden magical sperm. And people started clapping and laughing, but he didn't hear what I said. So after the clapping kind of stopped and people noticed that he was kind of talking to his sister next to him, like, what did he say? And then it got quiet in the room and she leaned over and said, what I said, you have gold. He said that you have golden magical sperm. And then he was like, yeah, I do. And he started waving and then everybody started clapping and laughing. And I was like, oh, yes. You know, because there was no laughing until that point. It was the only laugh, big laugh like that. So then afterwards, Chad from Nickelback comes up to me right after we were done and we go back to this little room where the family is. He was like, man, what a great speech you wrote. And I said, dude, I made all that shit up right there and then, dude. And he said, how? So I doing that in front of everybody and being such a lover and a volunteer supporter of the Abbott brothers, I get a call in September of 2020, right after we bought this house. And so if you know what that's like, you have zero in your bank account because houses are really expensive, especially over here. So I get a call from the state saying that, you know, that limo that Vinny had? And I was like, of course, I partied in it a bunch. What's up? And they were like, we want to give it to you. The estate of Vinnie Paul wants you to own it. And I was like, does it run? Like, what is it look? What is it in? What condition is it in? And he was like, ooh, let me send you a video and a picture. And it was so rotted. It became one with the earth. It was neglected for years. Vinny wanted to fix it, but he got a quote that was $90,000 to fix it. A 97 Lincoln stretched limo. And Vinny was like, no way. It's way too fucking much. So he just left it rotting for years. And then he passed away. And then years later, I get this call. I say, of course, I'll take it. Not thinking, really knowing what I was getting myself into. I had to go pick it up in Vegas and bring it on a flat, drag it onto the back of a flatbed because it wasn't running the tire.
Yeah, it was like you couldn't drive it, right? Yeah.
No, nothing. So when I brought it over to Long Beach as a rusted, historic piece of shit, really. It would have cost them money to get rid of it. And they just gave it to me because it didn't cost anything, you know?
Right.
Because it was that bad shape. So I get this thing. I spend months and months and thousands of dollars trying just to get it running again, you know, replacing a lot of stuff that was rusted and wasn't even working. And you couldn't put gas in this thing. You know, it was just really bad. I got it running. And then now what? You know, and I was trying to see what I can do with it. And then my friend came up with this awesome idea to do my friend Sonny. He was like, dude, because I was stressing out on how am I going to pay for this? This is crazy. This is already costing me so much money. Like, what? Dude, what am, I was freaking out. And then my friend was like, dude, you need help. You need to ask the fans for help. And I said, dude, I don't know, man. Like, I've never asked for anything. I've never asked for help before. And he was like, you have to. You can't do this by yourself, man. What is he going to do? So let it sit there forever? You know, people expect you to do something with it. And so we came, you know, we came up with the GoFundMe idea, and everybody that donated anything got their name engraved on the inside of the back bar panel. Like the whole back bar is 893 names. After about a week, we raised about 33,000, and you know, months later, it went up to 50. And when I was trying to go around to different body shops in the area, everybody was rejecting me. Nobody wanted to work on it. They said it's too much money. It's too much time. You don't have enough money, and we don't have the time to fix this. You know, people wouldn't even call me back after seeing the limo. It was getting to the point of like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. It's this is so expensive. Like, I can't even with the money that I raised fix this. I met the guy who originally stretched the limo back in the end of the 90s. It's a 97 Lincoln stretch, but it's stretched longer than normal. And at the time, there was a famous place in Corona, California, about an hour from here, that would customize limos and sell them to different parts of the country. Well, a guy that worked in the shop at that time, customizing this specific limo, because they had limo brand names. And you knew what company stretched it, and it had the badges on the limo. And so this guy, who I happened to get a hold of, was like, I worked in a shop that did this original stretch. Come in, let's talk. And I was like, oh my God. And when I met him, he was such a great person. He wanted to help me, but he's like, dude, this is going to cost so much money. You have to redo this whole thing. Like, it's, you can't, the support, like everything, you have to gut of everything and start over and build a new limo. And he was like, you just buy a used one, pimp that out and call it a day. And I said, dude, Enrique, I can't do that. This is a specific limousine from this famous pair of brothers. And I have to fix this. You know, I can't do that idea. And he was like, Jose, it'll cost so much money. And I was begging him, Sydney. I saw a little glimmer of hope. And I was begging him, please, Enrique, you're my only hope, dude. You're the only person that can do this. And he agreed to do it for $50,000. He said, it's a $100,000 project, but I'll do it for $50,000 because I want to help you. And I love this story. I want to be a part of this. This is a good thing for you know, my heart. And I was like, oh my God, I'm an emotional guy. I had tears, but I was trying to be cool. And Then it was in the shop for 7 months, and he gutted it and completely everything is brand. I mean, so much, and all the inside of the back is all brand new. We reused a lot of the original pieces, the doors, the windows, the front, the back, the wheels. We just re-chromed them. So a lot of stuff is original, but the electrical, AC heating, the stereo system, which is so crazy. Like, everything is brand new and custom, and it's got a beautiful tribute to Vinnie Paul and Dimebag in the back. I have Vinnie's original license plate inside the limo. I have his Dallas Cowboys bottle opener from his kitchen in Vegas inside of the limo. That's where we open our Modelos. And yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous memorabilia. I cannot believe that I have this. I talk about Vinnie and Dime so much to strangers, on podcasts with you here, everywhere I go, people ask me about this limousine. So I'm talking about Vinnie and Dime more than I've ever talked about them in my life. They've given me beautiful signs of gratitude and thanks. Since I've done this, I feel like they watch over me. I'm not even kidding. I feel like that limo has so much positive love and energy. I spent so much money, so much time, so much energy and effort into rebuilding this. It's no one would ever know that. I mean, only like me and my family. Like, I spent, people don't even know how long this took. And how much time this took away. I didn't do work. I didn't do shit because I was handling this. It's still so stressful. Chris Jericho paid for a year of me to park it indoors because it tried to get broken into in a lot that I had it after I got it fixed. And I was like, no fucking way. And then it's expensive to park a big ass 29-foot limo in Orange County, California. It's really expensive. Indoor parking is really expensive because it's like the size of an RV.
Right.
So I found this place that were big Pantera fans. They gave me an awesome discount. They charged me $333 a month, which is Diamond Vinny's favorite number. And I have that tattooed on my hand. And so they agreed to charge me that much. And Chris Jericho loved the story that he sent me a check for a year's worth of parking for that limo. And I couldn't believe it. He was the biggest donor of the limousine. So thank you, Jericho. But just because I was on this podcast talking about it and he heard that story and he was like, dude. So I've been so blessed for everybody to help me restore this. But this is a limo of the people. Like, I did a cool thing in Vegas last month where I just parked it somewhere on a Sunday afternoon. And I gave out free black tooths. And I had whiskey shots for anybody that wanted to come inside the limo and take pictures and go inside and do video and do shots, smoke weed with me, whatever. So I'm going to, you know, just do things where they can go inside. I've parked. I drove it to Aftershock. I had so many band members and VIPs in it. I had fans in the limos. I don't even know these people. And they would just come. I would invite them in. Just like Vinny and Dime would do. Yeah. You know, I would give them drinks, give them shots, give them whatever they want. Like, that's what this. So the vehicle is a symbol of what those guys represented on Earth and how they treated people. And, you know, I want to use this vehicle in a lot of cool ways, but really to raise money for a charity that I'm starting that I already have up. I'm just waiting to get my last clearance from the government to be a 501c3, and I'm only a week away from that. So I've been working years on starting a charity. And so I thought that using this limo for people that want to rent it to go to shows in the area, use it for whatever personal reasons. Well, you know, if they want me in it or out of it, doesn't matter. You know, it'll be whatever. But that money will be how I can raise money for my charity called Headbang for Science. So I want to give back. I want to use it for good. But it already represents something very beautiful. And I can't believe that I have that.
That is insane. It's incredible that, you know, they stay just so relevant and, you know, the love, you know, even after, you know, they've passed away, you know, it's so strong. Like, it's stronger than ever. And I love that. I had no idea that you did that where people, you know, could come and hang out. That's so cool. Like, It's fucking Vinnie Paul's Limo.
I want to do that everywhere I can. And, yeah. You know, even maybe take it to Daytona when we go to Welcome to Rockville in May. And the president of the track out there, I met him in November when we were out there. And he said, why don't you bring the limo and we do charity runs on the Daytona 500 on the track. And people can ride in the limo for the charity around the track. And I was like, oh my God. That's what a great idea. So yeah, but Sydney, just real quick, the Headbang for Science is a scholarship award where I'm going to award a graduating high school senior who has financial need, excellent grades, majoring in science or medicine, and loves heavy metal. Headbang for Science. My first award is going to be given this spring. Next spring in 2023. And right now the plan is to give $10,666 to one graduating high school senior and start a group of an alumni and help students and help metal nerds and people like me that need the help. And there's no such thing as a heavy metal scholarship award. Now there is. And so I'm the first to have it. I'm very proud. I have an awesome board of directors. Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm is on my board of directors. She's a dear friend of mine. And I have Danny Wimmer on there as well, who's the biggest rock festival promoter in the country. I have some really cool people representing the medical and the rock industry that are on my board of directors. And I have my bylaws, my articles of incorporation. I'm already started in California. It's so much work. The limo was one thing. After I got the limo done, then I was like, what else can I spend so much money and time on, you know, that's going to just take me away from everything? Why don't you start a charity? So, but this is an idea that I came up with in a dream in 2014. And I woke up the next day and I went to LegalZoom and I started my charity in Jersey. But then I moved it to California and I've done everything now since. And just getting my 501c3 status, which means if somebody gives me money, then they can get a tax write-off for their taxes. And that gives me a code that I'll be recognized. And I'm already a recognized public charity, which is, there's so much work. And I'm doing this all by myself. Yeah. But it's one of these things where I feel so strongly about it. And the karma points that I'm going to get into my karma bank account is huge. And that's what I want. I really want to help. And I want to make this a big deal. And I'm going to talk about it so much. So we're working on the website now. So it's up, but it's not, you know, I haven't really made it public just yet. So yeah. I'm waiting for a few more things. So there you go, Sydney. Something else that I'm trying to do to give back to our community.
No, that's cool. There's a lot of, you know, scholarships that are, you know, music related, but not a lot, you know, not one that I've heard of that's, you know, not like, you know, if you major in music or something like that, but it's cool that like, it's not a music major, it's for a music lover, you know, that you don't necessarily have to be majoring, business or theory or any kind of instrument. That's really cool. I've never heard of anything like that before.
It's a bulletproof, beautiful thing that I cannot wait to really promote and to launch. And I really know for a fact that I can encourage students to do well in school. Sometimes they just need that little extra thing to be like, oh, dude, I love Jose. I'm going to win that so that I can I'm going to try to win that. So people that apply, you have to have a high grade point average. Like you have to, it's not just for people that are just like, okay, students, this is for nerds. So like, that's what's so cool about it. Like, even if they don't get the award, applying for it is my reward because then they work so hard to get to that point.
Right.
So it's really a really cool thing because I know how many doctors, scientists are massive fans of heavy metal music, but there's never been a combination of the two things as a financial award. And I want to make it substantial and I want to make these people famous too. Like my first winner, that person's going to be like a friend of mine, you know, like forever. You're the first person to receive this scholarship award that's going to go on well beyond my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that's going to be forever. And I want it to be forever. And so to start that alumni and then to have students see that and how much love and praise that I give that student on the radio, on social media, you know, having taco dinners with me and tequila with me and my family, like that's people are going to want to win that. And so to me, that's it. I win because they're going to try. And that means everything. And that's all you need to do is try. Because remember what I said in the beginning, it's not about that degree so much as it the journey to it. So if I can encourage some big metalhead to go to a 4-year university to major in, to be a chemistry major and to go to be to be a pharmacist, like, oh my God. And their favorite band's Pantera. Oh my God. Like, it's going to be hard for me not to give it to that person. So, you know, but yeah. So, and I'll tell if they're a metalhead. People ask me, well, how are you going to know if they're metalheads? Well, I'm going to do a video submission and an essay. So, and I can tell, we talked about it earlier. You can tell fake from real. So when I'm seeing somebody on video, you know, presenting me, you know, why they're metal and what metal means to them and the scholarship award. And I can tell, you know, if somebody just says, oh, I love Five Finger Death Punch and Third Eye Blind, or I don't know, like, it has to be genuine. I mean, Five Finger's great, but it has to be more than just like, you know, this is just this one thing. Cause if they're going to go for the most popular band, then I'm going to be a little suspect. Yeah. So it's going to be cool to look at these submissions and to really be able to be like, okay, that's my person right there. That's going to be someone that represents the Headbang for Science alumni, the organization, you know, someone that I feel like is going to really complete this and finish this, you know, and be a doctor from it. So that's so cool. And that's the thing that gets me most excited is Headbang for Science. I have an awesome logo. You know, I've worked so hard on this, Sydney. So it's taken, today's 2022. 2014. So it's been a bunch of years.
Almost a decade. That's crazy.
Yeah. But I stopped working on it because I moved to California and then other stuff came up and then it wasn't a priority. And my old manager was like, that's not something you want to do now. You would do that later when you're older. And it's like, but no person like this, I want to do this now.
The time is now.
But my old manager was like, no, do that later. Let's make money right now. But he's not my manager anymore. I have an awesome new manager. And who, when I first told him about this idea, he was like, that's amazing. Because that's the launch pad for everything that I do. You know, if so, you know, whatever, any festival that I host, I'd love to raise any event that I do. I'm going to do a big launch party in April and Spirit Box is going to play. So, you know, like I want to make a lot of noise with this. And I think this can be a really cool thing for the community.
No, this is really cool. I'm excited for that. I'll definitely, when it goes live and everything, definitely share it. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know too many high school seniors myself right now, but I will definitely share it around. That's really cool. I love shit like that. That's, you know, like you said, it's college, you know, even with college being so expensive and it's just, you know, that, you know, in and of itself is such a hurdle that people have. And, you know, to even have a little bit of a push, you know, and have another opportunity where people, you know, may have not gone just because of finances, you know, if they can have a little bit of help, you know, that's amazing. So that's really cool.
Yeah. And again, it's just the motivating to do it. Yeah. Like you have to be a badass to apply.
Right.
So be a badass and then apply. So I think that's going to to me is going to move the needle the most.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jose, for coming on. This was so great. I am, you know, I'm so happy to have you on here and to talk to you. You know, like I said, we kind of started out off camera, you know, but I'm, you know, starting my journey as a DJ and, you know, to be able to, you know, talk to people like you and, you know, other DJs on other rock stations, you know, whether it's satellite or, you know, FM, it's really cool, you know, to just see people who have done it and have succeeded and have, you know, done great things with it. So no, this is really cool. Thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
You're welcome, Sydney. And this is not the last time that we'll be hanging and stuff. So I'm looking forward to hearing your shows and, you know, who knows what the future holds, but I'm very happy to be able to do this with you and to encourage you with your hosting and presenting stuff. So I hope some of the stuff that we said, you know, helps you become even more of a badass.
thank you so much. It definitely will. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You can check out Jose on all of his social media. He's on Twitter, Instagram, of course, on all the Sirius XM socials and, you know, websites and everything. He is on, again, Sirius Liquid Metal and Octane. So you can check out all those channels and hang out with him there. And yeah, he's going to be hosting some festivals as well this year. The return of live music. Fingers crossed everything goes on as planned. But yeah, no, this was so cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. I look forward to hanging with you in real life too, Sydney. So hell yeah.
You just finished listening to my conversation with Sirius XM host and program director, Mr. Jose Mangan, the metal ambassador. And what just an incredible dude. Am I right? Like, he just spits so much wisdom and insight and knowledge in everything that he says. I was just hooked the entire conversation. He just had me so intrigued into everything that he was saying and all the stories he was sharing and all of the insights about this industry. So I hope that you guys got as much out of this conversation as I did and, you know, got to know a little bit more about, you know, a DJ that you may listen to all of the time. So really great conversation. I couldn't have asked for a better chat for the 50th episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. So thank you so much, Jose, for coming on and for being a guest and for taking the time out of your day to just hop on and hang out with me. If you loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal from the Inside podcast, the best place to do so is over at www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. And here you can go ahead and click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. And as always, every single dollar that I receive goes directly back into creating even better content for you guys. And yeah, if you'd like to get some merchandise, get a little something in return for your donation to the podcast, you can head over to Season of Mist's website. The Black Metal Label actually handles all of my merchandise, and that is season-of-mist.com. Here you can type Metal from the Inside into the search bar, and our Flame logo tee will appear. You can get our logo on pretty much anything that your heart desires. We have long sleeve tees, short sleeves, tank tops, hoodies, camo tees, tees are specifically women's fit, and literally anything that you can think of, Season of Mist has over there. So again, you can get some merchandise over at season-of-mist.com, and every single donation really does help in creating the podcast and keeping it afloat. So thank you so much to anyone who has ever donated or has any plans to donate. But like I always say, no donation is required to listen to the podcast. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio. Wherever you stream your podcasts, we are available and for 100% free. So no donation is required to listen. If you'd like to keep up with Metal from the Inside, you can do so over on all of our social media pages. We are on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can also like our official Facebook page. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor specifically, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. You can also stay up to date with Metal from the Inside in general at our website, which is metalfromtheinside.com. Here we post all of the links to everything that you might need or want to watch or listen to. We have every podcast episode, the links to every interview on our YouTube channel, which is also Metal from the Inside. So you can actually watch all of the interviews that you listen to here over on the YouTube channel, and that is linked on our website as well, and more. So definitely check out the Metal from the Inside website. Thank you guys again, as always, for listening and for being a part of the Metal from the Inside community. I am truly so thankful for every single one of you that takes time to listen to the podcast and care about what I'm doing and, you know, care about these conversations. It is so incredible to me that you guys want to be a part of it. So thank you guys so much again. What a wonderful episode to celebrate 50 episodes of the podcast with. We have so much more ahead this year and in the future, even past 2022. So I thank you guys so much. We'll be right back here next week for another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. As always, stay safe, take care of yourselves, spin your favorite hard rock and heavy metal record for me, and I will see you guys next week. Rock on!